This piece was brought to you by Roberta's. Roberta'sPizza.com.
Ollie's busy making tracks. You're stuck with these four dumb hacks. Jamie, Chad, Jim, and Sam. We will do the best we can. Not the Mama Cookies Party. Mama Cookies Party.
Further ado,
Christy Jam.
Here's to the state of New Jersey, where bridges are the playthings of the powerful and vain. Commuting is a nightmare by car, bus, or train. The parkway and the turnpike crumble with disdain. Raise the fares and the tolls, and never mind the pain. Here's to the land you ripped out the heart of. Chris Christie, find yourself another place to be a part of. Here's to the suburbs of New Jersey. Tend your lawns and gardens and listen to the boss. Ignore your friends and neighbors whose paths you never cross. Lock your doors, bar your windows, and nothing will be lost. But if you raise my taxes, out of office you'll be tossed. Here's to the land you ripped out the heart of. Chris Christie, find yourself another place to be part of. To the politics of New Jersey, where women's bodies are the property of bitter old white men, and reproductive freedom is still a mortal sin. Ban the abortions, ignore the children. Who needs better schools when we've got prisons? Here's to the land you ripped out the heart of. Chris Christie, find yourself a better place to be part of. Here's to the prisons of New Jersey, where black men go to jail for half a gram of weed. Where baggers and polluters are free to ply their greed. We'll give them food and shelter as long as they're not free. Empty the high schools, build more penitentiaries. Here's to the land you ripped out the heart of. Chris Christie, find yourself another place to be part of. And here's to the politics of New Jersey, where Christie's is the savior of the whole GOP. 2016 will set the white man free by siding with the NRA and the Tea Party. I'd sooner vote for Frank Underwood if it were up to me. Here's to the land you ripped out the heart of. Chris Christie, find yourself another place to be a part of.
And that lovely piano part is our fearless leader, Oliver Ignatius.
That was lovely.
Very nice track.
And of course, the melody is Here's to the State of Mississippi by the great 60s folk singer Phil Oakes.
That was like the calmest anger I've been a part of in some time.
Well, yeah, that's like the folk thing is that you... you deliver your angry political statement with good diction so you can hear all the words and you sing loudly and you don't play over the vocal. It's all about the
lyrics. Well, that was the thing about Phil Oakes. Phil Oakes, much more than myself, had the voice of a pop singer. So it was kind of like the turtles singing about racism and whatnot. It was.
I enjoyed the line, a black man gets arrested for a half gram of weed.
Yes, bankers and polluters are free to ply their greed.
I enjoy your wordplay, Jimothy.
Yeah,
very nice.
Well, thank you. So anyway, that's our
political tune. We need more. We need more political tunes.
Isn't it amazing, given the world we're in, that we don't have more political tunes?
I believe that, like most things, 9/11 killed political music. I believe that.
I don't know.
Because people weren't able to express themselves musically in a constructive way after 9/11 for various reasons.
Yeah, but that was 14 years ago.
Yeah, but
so guys who were
name a great political artist in the last 14 years.
I know, Kendrick but guys Lamar. Who were, you know,
there's not
no Jamie. This
that's
is not this is that a discussion. Explicit,
that's
no,
not is, explicitly
it, it, it,
political.
It is. If you listen to it, it's like this is a discussion I've had like with several people in the past, which is that, including Oliver, which is that like I think that political and protest music exists now. It's just not in white rock and roll. It's in predominantly African American hip hop and, you know, whatever the fuck D'Angelo is. Like there are songs of
you're
protests.
Describing a pretty recent phenomenon, though, for the most part. I mean,
it's in the last two to three years. It's like it's really, as you've seen the political tide change in the country, you've seen it reflected in the kind of music. It's just not necessarily the first kind of music that somebody
I would argue to. I would argue that the conscious rap movement from the late 90s and early 2000s was more distinctly leftist and kind of was quelled for a while, and some of that is coming back. Because, like, the rapper Common was a political artist, and he kind of stopped
like
doing
probably
it.
Probably my favorite rapper.
And, like, yeah, but he hasn't said anything worth a damn in a very long time.
I always thought, though, that the marketplace quelled political rap.
I mean, you had
Public Enemy and Queen Latifah making these amazing records in the 90s, and nobody bought them. Those were not.
That's not true.
No, that's not. It is true. Those were not hit records.
Public Enemy were dropped from
Columbia Records. Queen Latifah did not have hit records with her songs like Unity and whatever, all of her political songs. You know, gangster rap.
I feel like those records still probably.
Gangster rap sold millions and millions of records, and political rap did not.
I think that those records, though, retroactively, those Public Enemy and Queen Latifah records, sold more records than a hit now.
Maybe retroactively,
because the
like,
industry has shrunk. Also,
yeah, but I'm saying, but in context, at the time that they were released, those were not considered.
But what about Rage Against the Machine? In the 90s, that's a band that would sing about the Zapatistas and Mumia Abu-Jamal and the Black Panther movement and the Civil Rights movement.
Yeah, but those are all past events. I'm saying they weren't contemporary. Like
They were pretty contemporary.
They weren't writing.
These are things
about
that are relevant. You know, they were talking about relevant things.
But I'm saying, like, you know, songs like half the freaking tracks on How to Pimp a Butterfly, Kendrick Lamar's new record, they deal like directly with issues that have been prominent in the American media in the last year and a half, and it's like
a recent phenomenon. It's not like he started in the
political I think you're dead on when you say like it definitely it started with the conscious rap and like Native Tongues and things like that in the 90s, where like you had people coming around to express political and ideological beliefs through rap music. And then Jim I think hit the nail on the head. Then you had a prolonged period from the late 90s up through like my adolescence when you had freaking shit rap music on the radio. You had like the fucking Holiday Inn. You had just terrible rap music. And then it's only like in the last several years that we've allowed musicality to go back into mainstream hip hop. And you have somebody like Robert Glasper playing on the number one streamed record on Spotify. Like that's the thing that we're getting back to. And when that happens, you can have cool political messages come through in music. I just don't think it's happening in rock music is my point.
True.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the passion has been sucked out of rock and roll.
Jamie is smiling
by the corporate machine.
Snidely smiling for those at home.
You know,
well,
the rock and roll audience is a pretty apathetic audience in a lot of ways.
But again, it's the marketplace. Outlaw country was huge. It's been replaced by bro country.
That's
right?
True. Well, that's distinct. See, these folk populist musics are distinctly conservative.
Right.
Like that, the pop country music.
Or
that's conservative. Or also like.
That's a
thing. The white guitar artist that still sells records like Nickelback or Kid Rock or something is distinctly conservative.
Folk music has become
completely apolitical on the radio.
Completely apolitical. Yeah. It's all about dressing up like you're a 1920s sharecropper, like Mumford and Sons, and writing, you know, like coming on stage in what's essentially a costume. And playing music that has no relevancy.
You gotta have four on the floor kick drum in every song, though, Jim.
Hey. And also, it's like, hey, ho.
Yeah, you gotta have one syllable yells.
Oy! Yeah, that stuff is brutal, man. Woody Guthrie would,
I'm endeavoring right now
spit on these people, I think.
That was the great thing about when the music industry was actually big enough to accommodate when it was really was a big tent.
Yeah, because like
even minor artists.
That's why I brought up Rage Against the Machine, because that was a huge band on a major label.
Yeah, but I don't think Rage Against the Machine. I think Rage Against 60-70% of Rage Against the Machine's fans would be just as happy listening to the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Also, well, you can listen to Rage Against the Machine
as a teenager.
Out the political side of it, you can just be like, "Wow, that guitar is fucking
awesome."
Yeah,
rock.
All they cared about that music was angry. So was Limp Bizkit.
But
the difference was that this is unfair.
I
think that was the same audience.
As a
both
teenager, my friends and I learned about stuff from Rage Against the Machine records. We would look up. You know, they talk about Mumia Abu Jamal. I didn't know who that was.
But you weren't. I don't think the average listener did that.
Yeah,
I think you are a more
you weren't the white trash yahoos at Woodstock who set fire to the stage and threw mud at Green Day and
you have two Woodstocks confused. 94 was 94 was the mud Green Day one. 2000 was the Limp Bizkit fire one.
Yeah, and that was the Rage Against the Machine audience.
That
in
was
99.
Also Chili Pepper Socks on Dicks, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So I think that was all. It was just this whole movement of angry, loud music that frat bros got down to, and Rage Against the Machine just got caught up in that.
I think a
small minority of fans actually listened to the lyrics.
But as a fan of that music, I think that's a slightly cynical view.
Well, it's a very cynical view, but because I'm
like of that generation, right. And I think that's only half true.
I don't know.
But that music is aggressive and. You know, having some aggression in the music plus some degree of leftism can be a good thing.
Yeah, no arguments there. Like,
But there's none of that. There isn't even any pseudo-political revolution rock like T-Rex or something.
Well, I think the reason for that is that, like, in the rock and, you know, because everybody likes to call it these days the indie rock sphere or whatever, the general taste has just gotten so, like, mellowed out.
The
and, like,
indie rock sphere, like you said, originated from a place that's very much that has almost like a socialist message. The way that Greg turned out to be sort of questionable, I guess, but he started a small business to compete with his band, to compete with corporations. The Minutemen, We Jam, Meccano, they had a whole ethos about being musician without being too connected to a capitalist system. You know, this is from a real place that is aligned with the left. You know, Fugazi, Minor Threat, Discord. But that sphere has been pretty depoliticized.
In today's atmosphere, like we
because don't have- it's because we're more even indie people are more associated with things that are of a corporate and capitalist nature.
Yeah.
These phones are owned by corporations. They own... I'm starting to sound like a wacko. But, like, you know, we cooperate so much with this stuff. But the ethos that started indie rock was, like, let's not cooperate. There is another way where we can do it without making rock. Because, like, you know, the reaction to arena rock... I think people's problem with arena rock, some of the bands are good, some of the bands suck, just like punk bands or indie bands. But arena rock becomes so highly associated with a capitalist act that it kind of cuts the balls off the thing that it had in the first place.
Yeah.
I think the almost socialist community nature of indie rock in direct reaction to that, I think that at that time would be people turning this stuff down. I'm holding my phone in the air like a wacko. You know, I think that if there was, would be, and I mean, obviously the DIY community have, you know, over here and there's all over the country that are maybe like stepping away from running a business in the same way, like Aviv where Jim works. But the audience themselves seems very willing to take part in a capitalist consumerist act. And myself too. I'm completely guilty of it.
I mean, just think of it like this, dude. It takes so much less work to go to. I know you would never do this. I don't think anybody here would do this. But it's like it takes so much less work for a kid to wake up and go to an Urban Outfitters and look and see what the cool five records are he should buy than going to a record store and pouring through records for hours and hours. I'm not saying this is a good thing. I'm just saying, like, I think that's why this is the case these days, and like it's become so flat because it's just everybody's looking at the same thing, and it's just really easy to get that thing because it probably sounds okay.
Well, I'm gonna recommend a band here. People should check out. There's a band called the Downtown Boys
who actually a great band. I checked them out.
They're actually female fronted. They're on Don Giovanni independent label
great
out of New
record.
Jersey.
Go listen to anything.
Great
on Don
record
Giovanni.
And very political, very very of today. And unfortunately, we can't play, but we can play another female fronted band. So this is a group that's going to be at the next Mama Coco's showcase on July 17th.
They're a fiercely political band, practically anarchists.
Yeah, here we go. This is some political.
It's like crass and then toot sweet,
but,
basically.
There's so much heart.
There's a sweet spot.
The sweet spot.
Sweet spot.
That's my new crew. The sweet spot. Da, da, da,
we were talking about.
Tonight, tell them about it.
If you're listening to this live tonight Thursday July 2nd, I am hosting a show that I promoted at the new Maxwell's Tavern, which is the old Maxwell's in Hoboken.
The new regime.
With three bands who were very popular and played Maxwell's many times back in the. Early to mid OOs, the Milwaukee's, Eastern Anchors, who were from Red Bank, and Bastards of Melody, who are from North Jersey. And they're all three bands are very good friends of mine, bands I've seen many, many times, who have played Maxwell's many, many times. So what we're trying to do is kind of get the old Maxwell's crowd invested in the new the place with new owners and a new paint job and a new menu and whatever. And Jamie was saying that we should kind of go on the offensive and try and book a really big headliner in there. But the place is so small, it only holds 150 people, that we'd have to charge like $30 or $40. And I don't know if anyone would come to a show, and Jamie was saying there was a sweet spot.
There's a we'll talk about. We don't need to talk about the logics of booking on the air, but we'll talk about it after the show.
25.
Okay. But... As your Jim has a stack of CDs, one of them is Frank Black. One of the best shows I've ever seen in my life was at Maxwell. I didn't go there a lot, but I played two great shows, and I saw a couple great shows there. And I saw Frank Black perform a two-hour or so solo set that was so fucking unbelievable that it was just, it was, this is somebody who was, like, very godly to me. And I was a few feet away from him in the small place, a stage that I'd been on. And that was something you just don't, you don't get that all the time. You don't get to face your idol in that way. And then after the show was over, I took Jesse, my drummer of both my bands. It was his birthday. I got him these tickets for his birthday. And we just worship Frank Black and the Pixies. A humongous influence on everything we do. And so, of course, we played Maxwell before. There's a little room downstairs where people go and smoke weed and hang out. So the show was over. I was like, well, are you ready to meet Frank Black, Jesse? He was like, can we do that? And then I was like, yeah. Went to Maxwell's. Frank Black's hanging out with his friend, Reed Paley, was the opener. He's hanging out. Hung out with Reed. Hung out with Frank Black. I gave Frank Black a copy of Hot Wine by Brooklyn Watt on vinyl. Mm-hmm. And he took it and he talked to me about it. And that's a moment that you don't get. You don't get to just walk the same... just be on the, because we were kind of on the same plane. It was just and Maxwell, the atmosphere was so casual that the band and the audience just existed in a great harmony, and you're able to go that and go speak to somebody who you've probably listened to 8,000 hours of their music, and are just like profoundly influenced by it, and go have a fucking chat with them. Amazing club. I think it must be kept up.
Yeah.
It's I saw Guided by Voices do the same thing. Guided by Voices play 3 hours. They're getting drunk, smoking cigarettes. Everyone's getting high in there. I think I passed weed to Guided by Voices.
Voice.
And then after, when the show's over, they just stepped into the audience and shook everybody's hand.
Yeah.
Amazing club.
We should all hope for a Maxwell's type club experience, but we cannot all be so lucky.
You don't get it. You don't get it too often these days. They try and separate you. They try and separate the performer and the audience. But
well, it's also economics. There was a new replacements at that level of popularity. They probably wouldn't be loyal enough to come play a 200-seat club when they could be selling out, Webster Hall or whatever, which is what the Replacements did back in the 80s, or Husker Du, or Soul Asylum, or like a whole lot of those bands. They played there when no one knew who they were on the way up, and then once they had achieved a certain level of success, they came back and played there again out of loyalty and respect, which is, something that you don't see a lot of.
No.
What's that?
What's loyalty?
Jesse, what are you going to play for us?
Who's Jesse?
Sam.
thanks. Mort. Jesse Turrets is really pretty.
I got Jesse Turrets on my mind.
No, it's cool. He's a really handsome guy.
I got this. Jesse Turrets on my mind.
He played a banjo on one of the tracks on my new record. Sounds really cool.
Strumming on just a simple hillbilly from New Jersey.
It's a song. It's my tribute to the Peter Stanfill.
Nice.
And the Bottle Caps.
So. I have another tribute to play you. It's to a very different person. I'm just going to let the song speak for itself. This is Ethan Donway and Liz Drobitz, Dr. Barber. This record was finished 24 hours ago. This is the world premiere of Dr. Barber. Come see August.
I don't even have this yet.
Yeah, nobody has this. I only have this because I'm playing drums when we play on August 7th. Jesse Katz plays drums on the recording. Come see the show. Yeah. Here's Charles Barkley by Dr. Barber.
Shot black.
Dr. Barber, that's featuring my good friends Ethan Donway, Liz Francesoni. This is a good band. Ethan, I know for a while. He was in a band called The False Alarms for a really long time. And he went through a plethora of members. And
a plethora?
A plethora. He's a great singer.
Is that more than a minion?
Great songwriter. he's quite a character. And
yes, he is.
Yeah. I hope you enjoy this new Dr. Barber.
I've been hanging with him for like a month now. He's a cool cat.
I love Ethan. He's so funny.
Frickin'
I like to taunt him.
Ridiculous voice in the best way. Like, I hope I'm not the only person who's as taken with the way that guy sings, because I really like that.
Ethan, that's why I taunt him. Ethan.
Oh, that's yeah. Is that like when Jesse did you on the radio last week? Oh God. that was the best part of the show that you missed was Jesse Turrett's impersonation.
No, I listened to it. Yeah,
that was. Beautiful. On the note of beautiful things, you want to do one live for us song. Here?
Okay.
Let me give you some more microphones here.
Okay. So when I was a kid, I grew up in this nice Italian family.
I got it.
So on Sunday mornings, my dad and my brother and I would go to church, and my mother and my grandmother would stay home and cook. And then we'd get home from church, and there'd be some time between that and when we sat down to our big Italian Sunday dinner, and since there was nothing on TV on Sundays in those days, my dad would open up the old household stereo and play his records, which were primarily Frank Sinatra records, with a few other things, Count Basie, Ella Fitzgerald, Broadway show albums. But that was really my first exposure to music. And this is sort of a little riff on remembering what that was like. As a little kid.
Childhood from Jim Testa.
It's called Sinatra on the Stereo.
That sounds great.
Mama's in the kitchen. Sauce is on the stove. Roast is in the oven, cooking sweet and slow. Lazy Sunday morning, basking in the glow. Reveries and memories and Sinatra on the stereo. Close my eyes and ask myself, could it be so long ago? Curled up on the sofa with nowhere I want to go. Don't care what's on TV, don't really want to know. Lazy Sunday mornings with Sinatra on the stereo. Gordy Jenkins and Don Costa, Porter Gershwin and Berlin. These are names I knew as well as when we watched the Yankees win. But the voice, the voice, the voice, the voice, that was the whole show. Sundays wouldn't be the same without Sinatra on the stereo. Then here's where the solo comes in. Jenkins and Don Costa, Porter, Gershwin and Berlin. Those are names I knew as well as when we saw the Yankees win. But the voice, the voice, the voice, the voice, that was the whole show. Sundays wouldn't be the same without Sinatra on the stereo.
Sundays wouldn't be the same without me and Dad and Sinatra on the stereo.
All right. Very nice.
So that's brand new. That's kind of the where it's going.
It's a slice of life. It's a beautiful memory.
I feel bad repeating myself, but that was lovely.
Like, yeah.
Just both the songs that I've heard from you today have just made me feel nice and warm.
Thank
in,
you.
In a good way.
Well, that one should.
It's good to tell a story, a real story about people. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the most exciting story, but when you're honest, when you tell honestly about people and what they do, it's usually a moving, relatable thing.
I feel like I'm watching like 8-year-old Jimmy in like a little like onesie 1950s pajama thing, like running into his living room, and there's a fire, and Dad's got like this nice, almost corduroy jacket on. It's got like shoulder, maybe elbow pads, something like that. I don't know, but it's just
we didn't live in the Hamptons.
You're conjuring images, Jim. Yeah. It's working.
So who would you say is the greatest Italian American singer? I don't think it's Sinatra.
Really?
Also, do you make sauce or gravy?
No. I'm not a Sinatra guy.
Just no. Sauce.
Sauce, okay.
Sauce. I like Sinatra.
As I've gotten older, I've become a huge fan of Dean Martin.
I was just going to say that Dino is awesome, and he recorded some cool records that he's not necessarily known for, but like I've heard him do something like kind of like the Tennessee Ernie kind of material.
Yeah.
You know, he liked country music. And Tony Bennett, too.
Yeah.
It's very fucking cool. Tony Bennett's version of Cold, Cold Heart by Hank Williams. That's one of the best records ever.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm really excited for the Hank Williams movie that's coming out in the fall. It's going to have Tom Hiddleston, a.k.a. Loki from Marvel's The Avengers. No, he's actually like a very fine actor. Come on, Jamie, just get on board. All right, you're gonna like
it. No, man,
he does singing, and it's,
anyway,
it's
I was gonna say that my favorite Italian American singer is Dion DiMucci from the Bronx.
Ooh,
that guy, that's a voice to aspire
can't
to.
Can't go much wrong with Run Around Sue.
Oh, something's already happening there.
No.
That sounds
no,
like
no.
What's going on?
That's some Black Doctor Junior.
So we heard one doctor already.
Black Doctor Jr.
If we could have had time, we could have heard three doctors. We could have heard Dr. Skinny Bones and Black Doctor Jr. But
no, they're just skinny bones.
Is this a new trend? Is the doctor band names?
No, well, those were three old.
I'm saying Dr. Skinny Bones, now they're just Skinny Bones. So now there are only two doctor bands in the Mama Coco stable.
Oh, well. Dr. Skinny Bones retracted the Hippocratic Oath.
Yes, they violated the oath. They have to now get rid of the doctor.
All right, we're going to go out with this.
Doctor!
This is called Stubborn Axe Kid. This is from Black Doctor Jr. They're going to be playing the Mama Coco show on July 17th. Anybody want to plug anything on the 4th of July weekend quick? Any shows coming up?
I got nothing.
No, I got nothing.
Oh, July 10th is the last Brooklyn What show. You should probably come see it.
Okay.
Go to that.
If you ever want to see this band again, at least for a while.
Go see the Brooklyn What. All right. We'll see you next week. Happy 4th of July, everybody.
Yeah. Go
God bless America.
Good show.
And he is axing down this door. But he's weak, can't figure out that door will never splinter. So he smiles, he blindly hacks away. Let him know that he's responsible and does not have to. When this war claims some dirt, he plows. I don't mind.
for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.